Chakshurunmilitam yena tasmai sri gurave namaha. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swaminiti Namine. Namaste Sarasati Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvisesa Sunyavadi Paschatya Deshatarine. Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Adaita Gadadha Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Adaita Gadadha Sivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari. Gopi Dana Ballaba Giribada Dari Gopi Dana Ballaba Giribada Dari. Jasoda Nandana Braja Dana Dandana Jasoda Nandana Braja Dana Dandana Jamuna Tira Bonachari Jamuna Tira Bonachari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Narayanam Namaskritya Naram Saiva Narottamam Devim Sarasvatim Dasam Tato Jayamani Ajit Mukhakaroti Vasalam Pangulam Gayate Girim Yatkipa Samaham Bande Sri Guru Vinatharinam Padamananda Madhavam Sri Chaitanya Iswaram.
Glasses? No, not.
Glasses. 19.
Satvam jigangsasekasmad. Dinam akritakilvisham. Ahanishat katam yosham. Dharmagya iti yomata. Satvam jigangsase kasmat. Dinam akritakilvisham. Ahanishat katam yosham. Dharmagya iti yomata. Translation by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The cow-shaped earth continued to appeal to the king. I am very poor and have not committed any sinful activities. I do not know why you want to kill me, since you are supposed to be the knower of all religious principles. Why are you so envious of me? And why are you so anxious to kill a woman? Translation with repetition. The cow-shaped earth continued to appeal to the king. I am very poor and have not committed any sinful activities. I do not know why you want to kill me, since you are supposed to be the knower of all religious principles. Why are you so envious of me? Why are you so anxious to kill a woman? Purport by Srila Prabhupada. The earth appealed to the king in two ways. A king who knows religious principles cannot kill anyone who has not committed sinful activities. Apart from this, a woman is not to be killed, even if she does commit some sinful activities. Since the earth was innocent and was also woman, the king should not kill her. Text 20 doesn't have a purport, so I'll read that too. Praharanti navaistrishu, praharanti navaistrishu, kritagha swapi jantava, kritagha swapi jantava, kim uta twad vida rajan, karuna dinavatsalaha. Translation by Srila Prabhupada. Even if a woman does commit some sinful activity, no one should place his hand upon her. And what to speak of you, dear King, who are so merciful? You are a protector and you are affectionate to the poor. Thus ends the translation and purports to text 19 and 20. Chapter 17, Canto 4 of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Maharaj Prithu becomes angry at the earth is the title of the chapter. So the earth, the people, the residents of the earth were working hard, but they weren't making enough food grains to feed themselves. People weren't, they were allowed to work. It was a free society, but there was no work. So people were starving, praying to Prithu to save them. Prithu meditated and it seems that he feels the earth is responsible. So he aimed to shoot the earth and then the earth took the shape of a cow, ran away from him in outer space. He chased her. Now she's come back. She said, I can't escape him. So now she's trying sweet words. And this chapter is, now from now on, is the earth trying to convince Prithu Maharaj not to kill her. And the next chapter is, she surrenders and there's a solution to all this. So, lots of principles are in this chapter. One principle is that the head of government, head of state, should be able to see that in his society people don't starve, that they're provided for. That's one of the important principles. So since Prithu Maharaj is the incarnation of Godhead, he could use his own mystical powers to sustain the earth, but he's right now trying to see what's the problem, who's not doing their job. So it seems that he's come to the conclusion that the earth isn't pulling her weight. She's not giving enough food grains, herbs, minerals, products that she should. Well, this is quite unusual, though, because when the earth was out of orbit, it was the Supreme Lord who came in the form of Barahadev, the great Mahabaraha, the great Boar, and saved the earth. So sometimes we worship Bhubaraha Dev when we inaugurate a temple or a building. We do a puja to the earth before we do the groundbreaking ceremony. Do Bhubaraha puja. Bhu is earth and Baraha is the boar incarnation. Sometimes they're considered like husband and wife. And that's to appease the earth, that we're going to cut into the earth, we're going to make a foundation, we're going to disturb the earth. And so in order to appease her, if you worship Baraha Dev and give her the prasadam, then she's very happy. But now we're faced with a different situation. Well, different situation. Now the Lord is angry at the earth. She's not producing enough. I was just in Bolivia a week ago. And in the culture, the Incaica, Almara, Quechua cultures, they also consider that the earth is a personality. I don't know how many other ancient cultures consider the earth to be a personality. I don't know which language is in Aymara or Quechua, but they call the earth as Pachamama. Pachamama. And so they consider her to be a worshipable deity. You see people wearing t-shirts down there, Pachamama. It's quite popular right now. I don't know why exactly. But Mama is pretty universal, it seems. So there's a lot of ancient cultures that consider the earth to be a person. And the Vedas say that she's like a deity. That's why she could change her form. She could fly in outer space. She could do many different things. But she's being held responsible. The people are planting their seeds, but the seeds are not producing enough food grain. You know that at the end of Kali Yuga, something like this is going to happen again. I'm a bit of an agriculturalist, and different seeds produce different quantities of food grains. Some of the ancient tradition, like a basmati, for one piece of land, you may get 7 bags of rice. You get a special kind of hybrid. I don't know if it's called hybrid or just more of a not such a high class rice. You can get up to 40 or 50 bags, but it's a bit coarse. So different grains give different quantities. Somehow the grains, in at this time, they weren't producing hardly anything. So people were growing, planting, and nothing was coming out. We don't know what these genetically changed or these other different kinds of grains that are produced now. If you don't buy them from the company, then they don't work. So the same grain, if somehow that supply from the company breaks down, then those grains won't produce hardly anything. So I don't know whether that's the problem that happened here. I don't think so. But this is the kind of problem could happen in the future. There in India, in America, they have all, I don't know, they call it hybrid. What do they call it when they? I don't know what they named it. Huh? I don't know if it's genetically modified or if it's something else. They had it for 50 years, so I don't think it's genetically modified. That's a more recent thing, right? Where they put two plants together, and if you plant a seed again, it doesn't work. You have to always buy it from this company. Huh? Huh? Terminator seeds. That's how they make their money, is you always have to buy the seeds from them. So in the future, there's some problem where those companies don't produce anymore, then you got seeds which are all terminator seeds. They all terminate. So this is what happened with Pitu. Somehow the seeds all terminated, but he took it that it was the earth's negligence that was causing it. So he wanted cooperation from the earth. We want more produce from our seeds. It's kind of an interesting concept. Only Pitu Maharaj could do such a thing. I don't think anybody now could convince the earth too much to produce more. They'd probably use scientific methods, but other principle here is about the women. She says I haven't committed any sins, so I shouldn't be punished. Certainly not killed. And apart from that, I'm a woman, so women shouldn't also be punished. Or at least they shouldn't be killed, shouldn't be manhandled or anything. So first she tried to escape by running. Now she's trying to convince the Lord that I don't know why you want to kill me. In the end they work it out, but there's a lot of principles here. General principles of Vedic culture that women, children, they should be protected. So those are the kind of principles that the Mother Earth is invoking. That's what the Grihastha life is for, is to protect the family. In Lord Chaitanya was asked that what is the obstacle for people to advance in their Krishna consciousness, and he said that there are two things. You should not avoid, you should have good association, and you should avoid the bad association. They said, well, what's the bad association? He said, Krishna Bhakta Eka Sadhu Stri Sangiyar. That one of the bad associations is a non-devotee of Krishna, someone who's against Krishna, some demon, atheist, Mayavadi, people that are against Krishna consciousness, their association is very detrimental. The other consciousness, the other asadhu or non-auspicious association, said as a Stri Sanghi, which means someone who sees the opposite sex simply as objects of enjoyment. If you see opposite sex as an object of enjoyment, or you see just the people's bodies as objects of enjoyment, then that's a very sinful materialistic vision, which is very bad for spiritual life. This is different than being a grihastha, where one protects a wife, a family, where they see husbands served by the wife as a Vaishnava. He's protecting his wife and serving her as a Vaishnavi. That's a different kind of consciousness. So there, Lord Chaitanya was encouraging people to be grihasthas, but he was discouraging them to be materialistic in their vision of them. So when somebody transfers, say, from the brahmachari consciousness to the grihastha consciousness, they have to change their attitude, they have to change their, someone put it, change their subtle body. Because they're in a partnership with a wife, and both of them together are trying to advance in their Krishna consciousness. So they had to work together as a team. They should have a mutual love. And we're just doing a wedding ceremony. Prabhupada said in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita, I think it's the 5th verse, that normally sannyasis don't get involved in marriage ceremonies, but because we're preaching in the Western world, and I mean, some people live together nowadays and they know they don't get married, so it's a big thing if they get married. And we had to encourage people to be married and to be responsible and to build a family. That's part of our preaching. So in one of the mantras, it's called the Kama Stuti, the declaration of love. I'm giving my heart to you out of love. Who's receiving the heart? There's a whole mantra like that. And so that, all those things are love, responsibility, mutual respect. These are the kind of things that grihasthas are supposed to imbibe in their family life. And the kind of just looking at women or opposite or others as objects of enjoyment is detrimental to spiritual advancement. Beyond, you know, if that's all that they're looked at, not anything higher. So there's so many principles between the people. So some of these principles, the earth is invoking that I'm innocent, I haven't done anything wrong, so I should be protected. But Prithu Maharaj, as the incarnation of Godhead, who is the king of the earth, he's looking at it in a different way. He's looking that, you know, you have a duty to perform. You're the deity of the earth. You're not just an ordinary woman or ordinary person. If you don't perform your duty, then you're subject to be punished like anybody else. It's not just out of simplicity or something you're doing. Well, some, you want to put on the garland here? This is Prabhupada's garland. Get a trade. More yet. That's for who? Two for one. So Lord Chaitanya, thank you. Great service attitude. Okay, have a good time at school. Bhaktivinoda Thakur was asked, what's the most important thing for a grihastha? What do you think he said? Well, that's a good duty, but that's not the most important thing he said. Maybe it's a trick question for you, but he said the most important thing for someone as a grihastha is their spouse. Because grihasthas are a team. So if your spouse is in maya, you got a big problem. It's going to affect your whole family. If both are Krishna conscious, then it's smooth sailing. When people, sometimes I have in my application for initiation, people, the single people say that if I'm going to get married, try to marry an initiated devotee or someone who's Krishna conscious and so on and so forth. But many times that doesn't happen. They have other priorities. But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, he said that it's very important to find someone who's Krishna conscious if one's going to be married. And maybe there's other qualities they have to see too, compatibility and so many things. But having an appropriate spouse is crucial, because when you're married, two people become one. So if they don't have an appropriate spouse, they don't have a Krishna conscious spouse, then it's going to be tough sailing, rough waters. Then you can feed the swamis. You can. There's this interesting story, like Ramanujacharya. He was married before he took sannyas, and he asked his wife that, you know, to help him with his grihastha duties. One of the things that, as a grihastha, different sadhus, gurus, Vaishnavas would come. But she didn't like to serve the Vaishnavas. She had a problem. Maybe she was good in many things, but in that issue, she would insult some of the Vaishnavas who would come to the house. So his guru came. Different people come, and she just would neglect them, insult them in different ways. Maybe not directly with words, but by her dealings, she would be offensive in different ways. Like to make them know that, you know, don't come back again. So then Ramanuja said, look, I'm going to give you three chances. Three strikes and you're out. This is the first strike. You got two more. You got to help me. What's the use of being a grihastha if my wife's not going to help me serve the Vaishnavas, serve the devotees, serve the gurus that visit? We got to work as a team, and you're part of the team. People, I'm a Vaishnava preacher, people are going to come and visit. We have to receive them with respect. We have to receive them nicely. Otherwise, if you can't do that, then, you know, I'm finding it's very difficult for me. How am I going to carry on my duties as a grihastha? But then there was another situation. She also mistreated somebody, and then he told her, look at second strike. Give me one more chance. Then the guru of Ramanuja went and visited the house, and the wife also just kind of neglected him and said, my husband's not here, and this and that, something. And he got the message, like, you know, she doesn't want me. You know, I was going to wait for the husband, but okay, she's uptight or something. So I don't exactly remember exactly what happened, but somehow he got offended and he just left. So then Ramanuja met him on the way and said, what happened? Why are you going? And I was just coming. We were supposed to meet. He said, no, no. It's okay. No, what happened? Well, your wife seemed to be a bit uptight or something. I don't know. So he said, okay, that's the third strike. And then he sent someone, some disciple, with a message from her father. Because your brother's going to get married. There's going to be a big festival. Come and have a good time and come back home and, you know, help us prepare for the wedding. And she, oh, weddings, social events. This is fun, you know, great. You know, just serving this Vaishnava is such a drag, you know. So she had some problem. So she got her packed and I told her husband, look, at my father wrote a letter. Can I go? Well, okay, if you had to go, you know. The whole thing was a scam. So she went back home to the father, and he took sannyas. Then by the time it was time to go back home, she found her husband took sannyas. So we don't allow this in ISKCON, of course. The wife has to agree. But Ramanuja, he was quite... So then after that, he was preaching as a sannyasi. Lord Chaitanya, he took sannyas, but he had no complaints with Vishnupriya. It was his own situation. When we go on Navadvip Parikrama, one of the nine islands is Madhudram Dweep. You don't know, you probably, how many have been on Parikrama? quite a number of devotees. Srila Prabhupada decided it would be very nice sometime to come with us on Parikrama and share. We have the opportunity for the preachers and the senior devotees to speak at all the holy places. Every Prabhupada disciple is invited to speak something at different holy places. We take turns. Some tell the Leela, some tell the history, some tell just some realization or some message for the devotees. They don't have to know about the holy places. We have the nine islands, Srimanta Deep, Godram Deep, Madhur Deep, Kola Deep, Ritu Deep, Madhudram Deep, Ritu Deep, Janu Deep, Madhudram Deep, and Rudra Deep, and Antadweep. Each of the nine islands is connected to one of the nine processes of devotional service. So the Madhudram Deep is the seventh island, and it's connected with servitude, dasya. So in the Treta Yuga, Lord Ram went there, and he said he was smiling and under a big banyan tree, and Sita Devi asked him why you're smiling. He said, well, I'm remembering, you know, I'm seeing that I come here in Kali Yuga in a golden form, and I spread Harinam Sankirtan and deliver the fallen souls. Says, in our Leela, we're grihastas, we're together, but at the end, you go to the forest, and I am in separation of you, and I worship a golden form of you. But because you go to the forest, because they're banished to the forest, so for that activity of mine, I reciprocate. And in the Kali Yuga, I go to the forest. I take sannyas, go to the forest, and you worship a golden form. What was interesting is that when Sita went to the forest, she was very happy, remembering all the things they did in the forest. And Ram was feeling bad that, you know, why did I have to do this? You know, she's always worrying about Sita, but because of some moral issues of that time that were prevalent in society, he took it that was his duty. So she wasn't very happy about either of the situations. She just wanted to be with her loved one. But because he banished her in Treta Yuga, he banished himself in Kali Yuga. So there's a deity of Lord Chaitanya that was made by Vishnu Priya from the neem tree. And they say that that deity is the one worshipped in Navadip and Koladweep in the Dameshwar temple. A very beautiful deity of Lord Chaitanya, golden, painted gold color. So that was deity. And there's the wooden shoes that Lord Chaitanya sent to her, which are still in the temple there. How many have seen Dameshwar Gaur? It's not so many devotees have been to these holy places. So all the Leela between Ram and Krishna and Gauranga, so many places they have some interaction, they have some connection. That's why sometimes Lord Chaitanya takes the form of Sarabhuj, six-handed form, two hands, Krishna, two hands, Ram, and two hands, Gauranga. They're the same personalities in different forms, in different pastimes. So Lord Chaitanya he was bound to take sannyas to banish himself before, but that was because the overt reason was that when he was preaching he got absorbed one time in chanting the names of the gopis in ecstasy. remembering the 10th canto Bhagavatam. And one of the students overheard him and told him, you should chant Hare Krishna. You shouldn't chant the names of the gopis. And started to instruct him that he was in Maya or something. And Lord Chaitanya got impatient with him, that who is he to instruct him? And chased the student away. And the student created a whole revolution. He told the other students that how he mistreated me, he scared me away, and this and that. And so all the students, because he is also not so old, he's under 24, they created a big demonstration against him. And then he was thinking that, because I'm so young and I'm preaching as a grihastha, so they don't respect me. And by offending me, they're going to have problems in their spiritual life. In those days in India, people would respect the sannyasi, so I said I should take sannyas. Then at least I'll get that much respect that I'm a sannyasi, I'm a sadhu. Otherwise, people, they don't take me seriously. So for that reason, for preaching, for spreading Krishna consciousness, he took sannyas. He didn't have permission of his wife or mother. After taking sannyas and then going to Shantipur, there Nityananda had arranged to bring his mother and tricked Lord Chaitanya to go to Shantipur. So when he saw his mother, he fell at her feet and said, maybe I made a mistake, maybe I acted rashly, but somehow or another I've taken sannyas, I've taken vows. If I don't follow these vows, it will be very sinful. But this body belongs to you, so tell me what I should do. So because she was such a loving mother, in these days, just affection was one thing, but they also were considering principles of religiosity. And she was also concerned that now he's taken sannyas, I can't ask him to go back to his house, he'd be a big disgrace, and would be very bad for him. So she was locked into the situation that he took sannyas, and she had to support that now. But then she asked him to go to Jagannath Puri rather than Vrindavan, that she can maybe make a visit later to Vrindavan, but to live in Jagannath Puri so they get some news. Otherwise, Vrindavan was too far away. There wasn't so much communication. Puri is 500 miles, and Vrindavan's about 1,300. Kilometers, I'm sorry, 500 kilometers, 300 miles to Puri, and 1,300 kilometers to what I remember from the Indian train manuals. Delhi is 1,400 and Vrindavan's 100 kilometers closer. Mathura is the stop. So all these things are happening. So Lord Chaitanya, he respected women very much. And somehow these kind of moral issues and principle issues are not so understandable today. In ISKCON, our system is that only someone can take sannyas if the wife agrees, if they're married. Still, and we give them time, that there's like a 5-year, 10 years waiting list, 5-year waiting list, 3-year, depending how old they are, to give them time to also change their subtle body and adapt. I remember once there was a devotee abruptly took sannyas when his wife left him, but then he was always thinking about his wife. He was still attached, so he wasn't able to adjust to sannyas. It was too big a change, too fast. So there's a lot of situations like that, that we have to do things gradually. So Prithu Maharaj is enforcing his principles that the earth should supply enough food grains, and he wants a solution, and he doesn't want talk, he wants a solution. He's using some heavy-handed tactic here, but ultimately, of course, he doesn't kill the earth. He's just threatening her. But he's making her know that he means business. He wants some solutions. He doesn't want just talk or anything. So she gives a solution, and there's a special ceremony of milking the earth in the form of a cow, and rejuvenating. I've heard that in Europe, in Germany, in some part, they use so much chemical fertilizers, that they practically kill the earth. You can't grow anything. It's like food grains don't come out anymore. It's ruined. So then they had to build it up by putting humus in the soil, putting manure, and rebuilding back the topsoil. There's a whole issue in Mayapur that whether we should use tractors or not, because some people said that when you plow with a bull, you don't go so deep into the soil. You just mix the topsoil. But if you use a tractor, it goes much deeper. It goes maybe a difference of 8 inches and 15 inches. And that turns up certain soil that after that, what happens is that ultimately you lose the fertility of the land. Initially you get more production, but in the long run you deplete. There's no underlying topsoil. All the topsoil is mixed up. So what we do is we put cow manure and different natural fertilizers to make up for that. We use bulls, and we also sometimes use a tractor occasionally for certain kinds of crops. There's a interesting ceremony that the people do in India, that they celebrate the menstrual period of the earth. I forget what they call that. Huh? They don't call it Earth Day, that's English. There's a Ambubachi, I think. Ambubachi. On Mumibucha, they worship the earth. And everybody, for 3 days, even the Muslims, they don't plow the earth. They say, don't disturb her during her, period. But as I was anyways, everybody observes these traditions, even the Muslims and the Christians, in this, at least in our part of the world where we live. They all are, so now is Ambubachi, all the farmers take a break for 3 days and don't plow the earth. So there are these traditions where astrologically they see the titi, that this titi is like a special day for the earth, and they do some puja. And maybe the Muslims don't do a puja, but they don't plow the land. So that's kind of interesting how they respect the earth. We just drill into the earth, take out all the petroleum products. We don't know what's going to happen down the road. We're having earth warming. It would be better if we had respect for the earth as a kind of deity and were very conscious about conserving the earth's resources. So there's a balance here. We're just exploiting the earth by force, but we don't know what's going to happen down the future. In the time of Pitu, people weren't doing such heavy-handed things, but somehow the earth wasn't producing. So Pitu wants a balance here. We're not going to disturb you unreasonably, but we want that when we plow you, we get our proper produce. So it's kind of an interesting interaction here between the different deities and personalities that are behind the natural forces, natural elements. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Any question? Atmananda has a question? You raised your hand. Yes, Prabhu. Who was first? Yes.
I recently heard a narration of this pastime in the Didi kitchen, and it was really difficult to cook because you keep thinking, oh, he's going to kill the earth, and it's a very suspenseful thing, the way Amala Bhakta Prabhu narrated it, and it got to the point I was thinking, well, why doesn't she just come out and say why she's withholding the grains? It seemed like she's making up a lot of alibis, or I was wondering why doesn't she just come out and speak her mind? She keeps saying all these things, you know, you shouldn't kill me because I'm a woman, and you shouldn't punish me, you shouldn't do that, and you da da da, and then you feel like it's very suspenseful, and then finally it comes to the point that she says, well, it's because there's too much burden on the earth of sinful people, and that's why I'm not producing grains. But she doesn't reveal that till the very end. I was just wondering why that the pastime is like that.
How am I supposed to answer that? Why is she? We have to ask Mother Earth. Maybe she's just testing how much she can get away with Prithu Maharaj. Sometimes the devas get a little bit proud. The demigods, or they're like the angels, but they get a little bit proud. And we've seen that Indra, recently we had Govardhan Puja. He kind of tested Krishna in his own way. He was impatient. Brahma stole Krishna's caste. Sometimes these devas, they seem to, maybe they don't know really whether the Prithu is God or whether he's incarnation. I mean, she says that, but maybe just seeing how much he gets, and when he sees that he's not messing around, he really means business, then she comes out with the real reason and asks him to help give a solution. Why she does that? Is it pride? Is it... for me, it would be a speculation to say why she does that. I don't think I have the right to do that. Whether maybe she's not applying her intelligence, and then just like, you know, I could speculate so many things. Or maybe she's testing the Lord. I don't know why she does like that. It makes for a big drama. But there was a time when the devas were fighting the demons, and they were victorious in the fight, but at one point in the fight they were losing, and they all prayed to Vishnu for his help. But after the things changed around and they were victorious, and they came back, and each of the devas, Vayu Deva, was praising Agni Dev. You did a great thing. You are a great warrior. You're such a wonderful general. And they're all praising Indra. And everyone's patting each other on the back. And Vishnu thought, I mean, none of these people are appreciating that if it wasn't for me, they wouldn't have been able to do anything. They're now taking all the credit. But when at one point they were losing and they prayed to me and I helped them, and now they forgot about that. So let me teach them a lesson. So he took the form of a yogi and was meditating in the heavenly planets in Indra Loka. And Indra saw this effulgent yogi meditating there and thought, what's going on? This is a story told by Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. And he sent Vayudev to go over and find out who it is. When Vayudev got there, the yogi was meditating. He opens his eyes. Before Vayudev can ask him anything, he says, who are you? I beat him to the punch. And then, well, I'm Vayudev. What is Vayudev? I'm the Lord of Air. What do you do? What's your power? I can move air. I can blow things. I can move. He said, they took a little piece of dry straw and put it in front of him. Can you move that with your air? Why not? Okay, do it. Move it. Let me see you do it. Let's see your power. Move that straw. So then Bayou Dave. A little wind. Nothing happened. Heavier wind. Nothing. Now you're like, what's going on here? Sound like hurricane winds. Trees are blowing over, you know, the rocks are moving, but that little straw didn't move an inch. He got all red-faced and embarrassed, and he went off. Indra saw him when he came. Oh, so who is that yogi? Oh, I don't know. You don't know? Why not? Well, I didn't ask him. What do you mean? What's wrong with you? I sent you there to find out. Agni, there you go. But I don't understand what's happened to the devas nowadays. They don't do their jobs, you know. But Agni Dev goes, and now again the yogi is meditating. Oh, Agni Dev is waiting there. Then the yogi opens his eyes. Oh, who are you? I'm Agni Dev. What is Agni Dev? Lord of fire. What power do you have? I can burn things. You can burn things. See that straw there? Can you burn that straw? Burn a straw, it's like, you know, it's not a problem. So let me see you burn it. I want to see your power. So then, Agni Dev. He sends a little fire. Nothing happens to the straw. What hell? A little heavier fire. Bzzz. Nothing happens. I go, okay, this, what's going on here? Bzzz. The rock turns red hot all around it. It's practically melting. He's a super fire he's sending. But the straw, it's just unpristine, untouched. Well, he's really burned out. And he went back to Indra. He was like embarrassed. Indra said, what happened? So who is he? He said, I don't know. You don't know? You didn't ask him either? No. I'm going to go myself. What's wrong with you people? Why can't you do a simple test? I just asked him who the yogi was. And then he goes over and the yogi is gone. And one apsara was Uvasi. She was flying by. He said, have you seen there was one yogi here meditating? Who is that yogi? So you don't know. You don't know who the yogi was? That yogi was Vishnu. You devas are all feeling so proud of your victory, but you didn't give any credit that it was without Vishnu. You can't even move a straw. You can't burn a straw. You can't do anything. Without his blessing, you are powerless. He was sitting in front of you and didn't even recognize him. He was Vishnu, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And Indra got very humbled by that. So sometimes the devas have to be put in their place. They're given a lot of autonomous power, but whether this is that situation, earth just got a little bit carried away. I don't know. If it's not revealed in the purports, I'm not a qualified commentator of the to give a new commentation. I can only follow whatever the Mahajanas have wrote this commentation. Maybe Jiva Goswami says why this is happening somewhere. To study it more carefully. Anyone else know that Prabhupada mentioned why the earth was being so disobedient? But sometimes it happens like that. Devas got a little bit carried away with their powers. And so it seems the earth, the Lord wanted the earth to do her part. It's not a free ride for the earth. Everybody pulls their weight in the whole universal administration. And he felt that she wasn't doing that. And she admitted that she had a reason, but anyway, they worked out. But why didn't she admit it right away? Interesting question. Okay, last question. You had your hand up? Oh, questions are included in the time? Okay. Well, I don't know anything. I'm just a guest, you know. Everyone's free to go, you know, if you. One more question.
Maharaj, at the beginning of your class, you mentioned that associating with people who are not Krishna conscious or adverse to Krishna is very dangerous. So it is a trick for devotees sometimes maybe that find difficult in the association of devotees. They don't get along good or something happens in their life that they ended up choosing to go outside because they think there is actually good people there. And also, last night you were mentioning about that in Bolivia you were there and the devotees made some skit about, you know, I'm too busy to take care of the, you know, we take good care of the guests, but we don't take good care of ourselves. So the question goes like, is it a trick of Maya from the devotee, or we should be really tolerant to whatever is happening and still remain here, or find someone outside that might be still good? And it's not necessarily a Krishna conscious person, but in their vision, that person might be good for them.
Well, abhakta, the way it's described, is someone who's adverse to Krishna conscious. Sometimes there's innocent people out there who are nice, who may be in the mode of goodness, but they're not devotees, but they're not also adverse. They're not negative to that, but this, especially people that are very critical, very envious, against devotees. I think it was more of the more extreme kind. But we were discussing last night after the Prabhupada puja in Prabhupada's darshan room that how Prabhupada was so caring and loving. I mentioned how I had once stepped on a nail. And somehow Prabhupada found out about it without even, he just wrote to me spontaneously, said, how is your foot? Heard you stepped on a nail. Please be careful. Krishna's given you this body. I'll take care of it. This and they wrote, he said, I'm very concerned that you're going to. One time he told me that I'm overworking. I take some rest. I haven't followed that instruction for a long time, but at one point, I found that all of those people that Prabhupada interacted with, I remember one time we heard that there was a bhakta, like not exactly a bhakta, like a visitor to the temple, kind of a bhakta, a congregational bhakta. And he was maybe strung out on some kind of intoxication and he wasn't able to shake it. He wanted to be a devotee but wasn't able to kick his habit, whatever you want to call it, off his drug habit. Somehow he committed suicide. And when Prabhupada heard about that, someone told him, he said, where's the bhakta, whatever, Steve or what, Eddie or whatever his name was. And then he said, well, he's dead. He committed suicide. We just heard about it. And Prabhupada started crying. He said, Krishna sent him to us. We weren't able to save him. Now where is he? Started praying to Krishna that please let him take birth right away. Because normally you commit suicide, you become a ghost, and who knows how long you'll be in a subtle plane. He prayed to Krishna, crying with tears in the eyes, that we're looking in the forest, we're hitting our head on the trees and the rocks. Where is this bhakta? Please bless him that he can take birth right away and become a devotee. Maybe one of you is that bhakta, I don't know. I mean, who knows? If you're born in a. So Prabhupada was very caring about not only the devotees, even the visitors. There's a famous, some president had fall into some maya, and Prabhupada told, I was in the room when he dictated the letter, and he said he was crying that this devotee has done so much service and always in difficulty. And the other devotees were saying, well, we kicked him out because he's fallen, and we found that he was doing something wrong. And then Prabhupada said, wrote back and said, well, tell him, fall down at his feet and beg him to come back. So, beg him three times to come back. So Prabhupada was very caring about the devotees, their health, their. I remember one time he heard the devotees were sick in Mayapur, the brahmacharis that were visiting for the festival. They weren't coming. He noticed that less people were coming to his program, so he went over and checked out the brahmachari ashram, or the guest house where all the brahmacharis were staying, and found they're laying that somehow, I don't know, it was food poisoning or just overeating. He considered it was probably overeating and not able to digest. Because Westerners, they like to eat a lot of fried things and a lot of oily things, but they don't like to use chilies. And they don't have enough. In India, you need chilies to digest the fried things. It's the works. It's, but somehow, that I explained in yesterday in the Prabhupada Leela with the Bhatta Chachuri, the hash brown potatoes Leela. So then Prabhupada said, well, if they do more service, then they'll get a bigger appetite. So let's give them some more service so that they can digest. And he started parikramas, 24-hour kirtans, different programs. The Prabhupada personally went over to check on the health of the devotees. So we're discussing that how sometimes devotees get sick. They have some problems, but nobody goes and checks on them. Nobody cares, and they feel like the devotees are impersonal, and people are better in the material world. That kind of thing happens. So we discussed how Prabhupada was very caring, and we should also try to be, you know, follow in his footsteps and be caring. You know, we're not the body. Doesn't mean that somebody's sick, we don't go. I mean, I was very touched when I had been attacked in Madrid, and I was in the hospital, and then Tamal Krishna Maharaj and Shivaram Swami, they flew down to see me, wherever they were, in London or somewhere. And they brought with them the Gaur Nitai deities. Sri Ramas has beautiful Gaur Nitai deities, and Gaur Nitai appeared in my hospital room. And we went there, and then they gave me darshan of Gaur Nitai. I mean, those kind of things, they mean a lot, especially when you're, you know, recuperating from a life and death situation. So it's something we should be conscious about. There was a You know, as a congregational minister, I meet a lot of members of the congregation. One lady told me that once she was going to a Namhat meeting, got into an accident driving her motorcycle, and she was in the hospital with a broken leg. And in the hospital, some other religious people from other religions were coming and offering to pray for her and to do her, you know, to help her, save her soul, so many things. But the Hare Krishna, the Namhat devotee, nobody from her friends that were the devotees went over there. So this time when I was in Chile, another guru's disciple got into an accident, was in the hospital. So I wanted to go to see him, but I was like a real tight. I was just there for 2 days. So then I phoned him up and talked to him on the phone. He would appreciate that very deeply. He said he's going to be okay. They went through the operation, and he was like practically crying that, you know, sannyasi took the time. I would have liked to go to see him, but this, I think it's important, you know, birthdays, giving people cakes or whatever, giving them some prasadam, and just being more personal in our dealings. Prabhupada was super hyper personal, and maybe many devotees didn't realize it because they weren't. But if you were close to him, he was very personal. He would notice if somebody was having a bad day or something, he would be very personal. So we could do more to follow Prabhupada's footsteps and be personal. Then, as you said, people wouldn't necessarily have to go out and look for that kind of. So thank you very much. Hare Krishna.
ladies over? Yeah. Okay. We walk by there.